Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Hybrid Jazz is a vision of all that is jazz, both traditional and contemporary, domestic and global. Here's your host, Trish Hennessy.
Well, thank you, Dave Solomon, so much. Man, it's been a week. Hopefully you have a chance, wherever you are at this point in time, to sit back and relax. It's going to be a really cool show. It's, what, the second day of August. Think about that now. 2012 has had some moments, good and bad, but it's moving along at a clip, wouldn't you say? Wow, the second day of August. Music in the house to surround a good friend that's going to be here today in the next hour. And so we have some friends to cheer her along, as it were. Cindy Bradley joins us next hour, and she's got a lot to say. Blues Alley is going to be where she stops by on the 15th in the Washington, D.C. area, so we're all pretty psyched about that. She's going to be visiting Philly. So much is on her plate, as you can probably guess. So we'll have some friends, some jazz and pink friends, and somebody that she collaborated with on a CD, and I know he's real happy about that because he's going to be a guest on the 16th of August on his birthday. Let's get this show started, shall we? We always start out with something that's classic. I thought this would be it today. Benny Carter, along with Oscar Peterson. The song is You on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy.
We'll be right back.
Wonderland. How do you get to Wonderland? Over the hill or under land or just behind a tree? When clouds go rolling by, they roll away and leave the sky. Where is the land behind the eye that people cannot see? Where do stars go? Where is the crescent silver moon? They must be somewhere on a sunny afternoon. Alice in Wonderland, where is the path to Wonderland? Over the hill, or here or there, I really wonder where.
And to have a special connection. You know, living in Baltimore, it's really wild to know that different people have come from Philly, as I have, who have migrated a little bit further down 95, and Gail Martin is one of those folks. And you might remember Gail was here some weeks ago to talk on behalf of the UB Blake Project. And Gail is all about making sure she gives back. As much as a wonderful career she has had, she is considered, certainly in this region, to be one of the most wonderful people, most generous of spirits. She makes sure that she gets the word out that she is about jazz education for kids. So I love her for that, and I love her for her warm, inviting voice. That was from her In Love Again CD with great personnel. Larry Willis on piano, Eric Kennedy on drums, Herman Burney on bass. Oh, Alice in Wonderland. Love that little take on that song. Gail is going to be, in case you are listening locally, regionally, Jazz Under the Stars in Columbia, Maryland, on August the 11th, which is proving to be a very busy date for a lot of folks. Everything is happening on the 11th. Oh, my gosh. And she's going to be with the Unified Jazz Ensemble on, I believe, the 19th in Annapolis, Maryland, in case you want to look that up. So much to play for you. So much to say. We also heard from another Gail Johnson. Make It Happen from Gail's Her Story, or Herstory, if you prefer. Gail, Lord, have mercy. I'm excited for her. There's a couple of things going on. Jazz in Pink will be at Jazz at the Creek in San Diego on the 11th. Told you. And also, Gail is going to be with Lynn Roundtree. She collaborated with Lynn on his CD. Did a beautiful job. My favorite song on Lynn's CD, Kaylin's song. Just so beautiful. Gail on piano, Lynn on trumpet. Amazing. Lynn is going to be starring at Club Waterfalls in the Detroit area. This is going to be on the 15th. It's a pre-Sparkle premiere. If you haven't heard the word on this, check this out. Lynn Roundtree will be in the motion picture Sparkle, the last Whitney Houston film, with Jordan Sparks in the lead role. And there's going to be some kind of band in this film. Lynn's a part of it, and that band will be at this Club Waterfalls premiere party, and Gail is going to be a part of that. I'm excited. Then Gail is going to be at Baker's Keyboard Lounge, which is the world's oldest jazz club in Detroit, on the 16th. Go, Gail. I'm really loving hearing good news about her. Benny Carter and Oscar Peterson to start. Cosmopolit, the Oscar Verb Sessions from the 50s. Oh, Lord, I love this. Benny Carter, can't say enough. Birthday commemoration on the 8th, born in 1907, passed away in 2003. Alto sax, clarinet, trumpet, composer, arranger, bandleader, teacher. Died at the age of 95. What a life this award-winning Bennett Lester Carter had. Ugh. Recorded in 8 different decades. Now think about that. I think at the age of 15, he was playing in clubs in Harlem. Man, when you just dwell on that, doesn't it disconcert you a little bit when some folks say, when somebody has passed away and they've lived a long life, oh, it's so tragic. Not tragic. We are all destined to live. We're all destined to die. And if you can have a wonderful long life with so many accomplishments, spreading your gifts around, making sure other people get a hold of your gift, it's just awesome. Oscar Peterson, another one. My gosh, born in August the 15th, 1925, passed away in 2007, a couple of days before Christmas. Just one of those outstanding keyboardists. Matter of fact, Duke Ellington called him the Maharaja of piano. On this particular CD, so wonderful, Ray Brown on bass, Barney Kessel or Herb Ellis on guitar. Oh, I just can't stand it when that cell phone goes off. Oh, Lord, Lord, Lord. I'm so sorry about that. Buddy Rich, J.C. Hurd or Bobby White on drums and on trombone for about 4 cuts. Bill Harris, just amazing stuff. And speaking of which, Cindy Bradley comes your way at the top of next hour. I see that her good friend Pete Gitlin is in the chat room, as are our great friends Griselda and Yolanda and Beach, the bride of Funkenstein, or Funkenstein if you prefer. I say potato, you say potato. All in the chat room and some guests. That's wonderful. Cindy comes our way in less than 45 minutes. And we're going to do a little something that is all about Cindy. I was thinking of trumpets and thinking about some greats that have gone before, some amazing people who paved the way. And I know that Cindy knows all of them, because the training that Cindy Bradley has is so awesome. We'll talk about that. Thad Jones, one of those amazing musicians who surrounded himself with amazing people, because you had to play a certain way with Thad. This is going back to, I know it. I'm going back to the 50s a few times today, folks. 1956, Blue Room from Detroit, New York Junction on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Thank you.
like a star up on the stage. She looked like someone from a golden age. I didn't waste a moment. I offered her a drink. She said, you might give a girl some time to think. Sometimes it's best to go with the devil you know. My mother
See, the only trouble with that track is that it's too short, honestly. It's too short. Oh, Daryl Walker on those superb vocals with The Devil You Know from East Bay Soul 2.0. I know that Greg Adams and the crew are so looking forward to the next few days. I know that our bride, Beach, is looking forward to it, too, at Spagatini's, Spags, in Seal Beach, California. Oh, my gosh. Look, if I was independently wealthy right now, I'd be on a plane, and you wouldn't be hearing this show, all right? And I'd be crashing with the brides in California in anticipation of this event. I know it's going to be a packed house. My gosh, East Bay Soul is going to be also, in case you're making your plans, in case you want to do a little traveling and want to save up, because that's what you got to do something special, to make sure you support folks. They're going to be at Scholars in Boston. That will be the day before New Year's Eve and on New Year's Eve itself. Can you imagine? All those fine men playing all those fine instruments. I'm still making plans. I am not quite sure what's going to be happening about that time, but I'll let you know in case we can get a busload of folks to head on up to Boston. Wouldn't that be awesome? Now, I was supposed to play instead of East Bay Soul, since I know I spent a lot of time with East Bay Soul on the show, but I was going to play Robert Cray, but I couldn't find the track that I wanted. Now, in the meantime, in looking up the information, and it was Robert Cray's birthday, his 59th yesterday, so I wanted to pay a little bit of a tribute, and I will. But now I find out, didn't know this until this morning, that his new album, Nothing But Love, is coming out on the 27th. I am so excited about that. Five-time Grammy Award winner. He's going to be at the Richmond Jazz Festival, by the way, next weekend. What did I say about August the 11th? Oh, my gosh. This Richmond Jazz Festival will be off the hook. There are so many fabulous people from the different side of the jazz spectrum. You know, straight ahead, in between, you got real contemporary, you got some soul-infused, real, real nice selection. So I know it's at a particular place in Richmond. The name escapes me right now, but do a Google search on Richmond Jazz Festival, and you will be delighted, I'm pretty sure. I know that I was got a hold of Roots and Grooves by Maceo Parker and Company. Ho! Life is so much better now. Oh, love to take these trips to the library with my son and just get into all the jazz selections that they have that you can take out. Isn't that a wonderful thing about some libraries that they let you do that? Some of the folks who put together the genres don't know what the heck they're doing, but if you do a little search, you'll find some really great stuff. Maceo Parker, in case you don't know, 69 this year, and in the evolution of funk, there was Dr. Parker filling prescriptions. No joke. James Brown, Parliament, Funkadelic, Prince, the best of R&B, the best playing with the funksters, the best rock bands in the world all wanted Maceo Parker, and they still do. Now, this was just a few years ago, 2007, 2008, and on one part of the CD, he has an homage to Ray Charles, who he absolutely revered. And on the second half, he's just getting into the funk. And what you heard was off the hook. And I'm going to get my little info directive here and tell you what we heard, because I know that Griselda, who's got a double whammy happening to her today with her migraine and her other scenario that's just making her put her face into an ice pack. That's how bad it is, and she's still listening to the show. God bless her. But Maceo Parker on alto sax and vocals, Rodney Skeet Curtis on electric bass, Dennis Chambers on drums. Now, let me just tell you about Dennis Chambers. One of Baltimore's finest artists that has ever come out of this esteemed charm city. Dennis Chambers is so adept at drums that Parliament had him working for them. And he's touring now with Santana, has been for quite a while, and actually was the catalyst to introduce Cindy Blackman to Carlos Santana. And I think you know the rest of that story. Oh, man, it was so sweet. Thad Jones to start Blue Room from Detroit, New York Junction, recorded in 1956 on Blue Note. Thaddeus Joseph Jones from a family of 10. Yes, that part of the Jones family had a couple of famous siblings. That Blue Room was a Hart and Rogers song. And what you need to know about Thad Jones is this, and there's so much more that I could say, but I know that time is getting to be of the essence, and Cindy Bradley comes our way at the top of next hour. He was with the Count Basie Orchestra from 1954 to 1963 at the same time, pretty much, as Joe Williams, who we're going to hear later on in the show, and just cut his absolutely bad arse trumpet teeth with Count Basie, and then
formed his Thad Jones Mel Lewis Orchestra, had that going for a while until he decided, to everyone's surprise, that he was going to move to Denmark. Tony Bunn, does that ring a bell? And a lot of our wonderful, beloved jazz cats moved to Denmark because the scene there in jazz, what it was and still is to a large extent really cooking as far as the genre is concerned. But Thad Jones, if you want to do a Google search on him, there's a whole bunch to say, no joke. Something else that I picked up at the library and I had completely forgotten was the partnership for a while, the absolute anointing there was when Joni Mitchell met Jaco Pastorius. And I got a hold of the essential Jaco Pastorius yesterday and just fell in love all over again with that jazz period that Joni Mitchell allowed herself to take, this big, fat journey that was essential for all of our ears. And, of course, there are those who say, well, it wasn't Joni's style. You know what? Joni Mitchell is a genius. She doesn't need to defend herself to anybody. She took this little trip, literally, from Maine to Los Angeles by herself in her car. She basically wrote Hijra, which is an Arabian word derivative. And she got together with Jaco Pastorius, and this is just one of the pieces of magic that happened. It's the title track, Hijra, from 1976 on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy.
Slide. trembling in my bones. I know no one's gonna show me anything. We all come and go unknown, each so deep and superficial. Between the forceps and the stone, when I looked at the granite markers, those tributes to finality, to eternity, and then I looked at myself here, chicken scratching for my immortality. In the church they light the candles, and the wax rolls down like tears. There is the hope, and the hope and snap I've witnessed 30 years. We're only particles of change, I know, orbiting around the sun. How can I have that point of view when I'm always bound and tied to someone? White bags of winter chimneys, gray truce against the moon. In the mirrors of a modern bank, from the window of a hotel room,
thank you.
Now, I don't usually do this. We're going to do it for this show today, though. Didn't know that Woody Shaw here had a 12-minute song with Time is Right. But I wanted to play Woody Shaw so that you would know something really significant about the artist that you're about to hear, Cindy Bradley. I didn't know until I did my research on Woody Shaw that there were some real bold analogies between Woody Shaw and Cindy Bradley. Normally, I would have been playing a Cindy Bradley song right about this time. You're going to hear four before the end of the show at 4 o'clock this afternoon. And you're going to hear a little bit extra because we're going to play something by Pete Gitlin that features Cindy Bradley in it. But I felt so strongly about playing Woody Shaw, and here's the reason. Because of those analogies and because of this, there is rarely an artist that is on the contemporary scene, as far as jazz is concerned, that I would even venture to say comes close to a master. But Cindy Bradley is such a breed apart in what she does, not only in the way of her artistry, but also the passion, the love that she feels for the instrument, the education that she has gained in order to play the instrument with complete magnificence, that honestly, she does remind me of a throwback to what was great back then. And here she is living with us now, this young lady who is a trumpet artist extraordinaire, a mentor, an educator, a composer, and not to embarrass her any further, but here's Cindy Bradley.
Hooray!
Hooray!
How are you?
I'm better now that you're here, and you know, honestly, that's the way I feel, Cindy. I just feel that you hearken back to what was great, and I think that you're doing such an amazing job for the whole contemporary jazz. You know, your perception is that you are a smooth jazz artist. To me, you are a whole lot more than that, and I think that you are schooling people in ways that maybe even you don't know.
Oh, thank you so much. Wow.
No, you really are. Honestly, here's something I wasn't going to tell you. When I have made sure that people have been getting snippets of what you've done on Unscripted, mm-hmm. There are a whole lot of jazz snobs in Baltimore and D.C.
Sure, I bet, yeah.
And they have actually posted, damn.
Oh, nice.
Oh, yeah, you have blown some people away. And actually, I've had a couple of messages from those same cats. These are guys who have said, she made me get on my good foot again.
Oh, it's so nice.
Isn't that cool?
That's great. Very cool, yeah. Definitely.
Woo! <Cool. laughs> So, is your head going to explode because there's so much happening with you?
Now it is, after that compliment.
No, I mean, seriously, you're always working now, aren't you?
Yeah, it's been good. I've been really lucky over the last, you know, 2-3 years. I mean, longer than that, lucky too, but things have felt like in the last 3 years they've moved really, really pretty fast. It's been great.
Yeah. And you were ready for it. I know that we had this conversation actually on Cool Jazz Conversations about Michael Broning and coming into the picture for Bloom in 2009. And you feeling like maybe a cult just getting up on its feet, you know, a baby in the world, as it were, as far as recording is concerned. But now, Cindy, I mean, everything that you've ever learned and everything that you have absorbed through playing with the myriad of funk and R&B and soul and straight ahead and contemporary jazz people, it really did. It came together quickly, I think.
Yeah, it did. It definitely did. And I spent, you know, most of my, you know, childhood and teenage years and even into my 20s not really knowing that a trumpet player could become a solo artist. And, you know, and have any sort of success. I just thought, you know, I studied jazz in you know, improvising because I loved it. And then I just played as a sideman in lots of bands and toured and did that. And I really thought that was really as far as I was going to be able to go, and was happy, you know, but just kept going for the solo career because I figured, you know, I don't want to look back and think, well, I didn't try. But I never expected, you know, the things that have come to me.
Yeah, I'm really marveling with you because it must be such a rush to be on a stage like in Dubai and see all these like thousands of people who have crowded to see you, and you're saying to yourself, wow, they're here to see me.
Yeah, it's an awesome feeling. It doesn't get old. It's a really awesome feeling.
What about, you know, what kind, and I normally would hold this off until later on in the interview, but I have to ask you, because in finding out about Woody Shaw, a couple of things just really hit me about him. And one of them is that he really didn't necessarily want to play the trumpet when he was, guess what, age 11 in his school band. He wanted to play in the band, but he wanted to play violin first and then saxophone, and the teacher said, nope, you got to pick what's left, and that's the trumpet. And
right.
He said, oh, shoot, really? So
he didn't
like
the sound of it either, right?
Right. He didn't like the sound of it because it sounded tinny. And then, you know, another real crucial element that he has in conjunction with what you're all about is that he valued mentorship so highly.
Right.
And you do too. And, you know, he was asked at one point, how do you feel about going overseas and letting these folks come into your clinics and sharing what you have? And he said it would be criminal to do otherwise. I have to.
Wow.
And that's the way you feel.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he taught Terrence Blanchard and Wallace Roney and
Chris Botti,
And Chris Botti, yeah. And when I was in college, it's a funny story. It was my first year of college, and I was the only girl in the jazz program, you know, playing horn, and I wasn't getting treated really nicely. And Terrence Blanchard came to the school to do a clinic, and we all played for him, and he like pulled me aside in front of the whole school and made a really big deal and said, you know, she's got something. And nobody would really call me to play or anything. And it changed everything for me after that because Terrence stood up and said, she's got something special. And all the other students and even the professors treated me different after that. And I've written Terrence Blanchard since and said, you don't know what you did for me. And he's like, oh, cool. I'm sure he doesn't even remember because he just, you know, goes around touching people all the time like that. But, yeah, he changed my life for sure.
Oh, he'll remember. I'll see him at Blues Alley after you do your thing on the 15th, and I'll refresh his memory, and he'll smile.
All right.
He will absolutely know because he's got one of those great memories. Woody Shaw apparently had a photographic memory, too. I remember that Max Roach had said that he was astounded. He would show Woody something once, and it was done. It was committed to memory.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I was thinking of all these things that, you know, I don't know you really well personally, but I just feel as if I do via your work and via the times I have seen you. It's just amazing to me that you have all of this honor. And I love that guys have really fallen under the spell of your artistry. That must be a rush for you.
You're the best, Trish. You really are.
Seriously, it's so cool, Cindy, to see that men respond to art and not what men usually respond to.
Mm-hmm. We know what that is, right?
Yeah, well, okay. You know, it's always good to have the nice little facade that you do because you've got a pretty good facade there, Cindy. But when you're on stage and you're doing your thing, I mean, I see jaws drop. It's fabulous.
Right. Thank you.
Yeah. I don't – man, I I don't even know what to say after that, because you just are that electrifying. You remember what happened with Burke's Jazz. It was so cool. That was a long butt show. You know that?
The Jazz and Pink show?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wow. Cool. And when you were on stage, there were folks coming in from the other shows down the hall because they got the word that Cindy Bradley was going to be playing. So.
Oh, I didn't know that. Really?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Cool.
Oh, yeah. I think Gerald Beasley might confirm that if he was to call on the show. But, yes, from his club, folks were rushing in because you were going to do your thing.
Oh,
and
awesome.
It just got packed that much more. And you sound so humble, but you've got to be used to that by now, where you get some accolades. People stop by backstage and say, "Man, that was hot, Cindy."
It's funny, like it. Sometimes it's like that, where I might go to a festival or a concert, and everyone knows who I am, and there's a lot of that. And then, like, I just did a festival this weekend. Nobody knew who I was.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like, it's people are still kind of, you know, maybe seeing me for the first time in certain parts of the country. And so, you know, I'm walking through the festival grounds and nobody recognizes me, and no one. And then, you know, they'll say, who are you here to see, you know? and then they'll see me and they'll say, I never saw you before, but I'm a fan, you know. So it's still building, you know. It just takes a long time of getting out there and getting in on a festival. So, you know, people from all over get the exposure to you, because it's a, you know, big place to try to get your name out there. But yeah, so I never really know what I'm going to get.
And I guess
people,
maybe that's,
you know,
not even fair to say, because it has been, you know, you've been playing for so long, but as far as CDs are concerned, you had the independently produced CD, and you had Bloom, and now you have Unscripted. So in the scheme of things, yeah, it has been a relatively brief time, and I think that the word for these times is over-communication,
mm-hmm.
because you are so well-known in some areas of jazz, but now I see, and maybe you can back me up on this, that with these jazz festivals, thank God they're mixing it up some, so that, you know, there's different kinds of appeals to different factions of jazz.
Yeah.
So, yeah, maybe that I can understand what you're saying there, that some
mm-hmm.
folks wouldn't necessarily know you because they maybe came to see Sonny Rollins. You know what I mean?
Sure. Oh, yeah, definitely. Yep.
Yeah. Well, cool. Blues Alley is going to be a trip. Honey, we're going to sell that joint out.
Are we? That sounds good to me. I can't wait to play. I've always wanted to play there.
Have you?
Always. I used to... Before I was signed, I used to tour with Pieces of a Dream, and they played at Blues Alley all the time. I think they still
do. Yeah.
And it's relatively close to me. You know, it's a drivable distance, and they were asking me to come play with them. And for some reason, whenever they were down there, I could never make it. Either I had my own, you know, own thing that night, and I was always really disappointed. I always wanted to play there. So, you know, now I get to go and do my own show. So I'm totally excited about it.
And that's a very cool stretch, because you're going to play Blues Alley on the 15th, and then you play my hometown, which is actually just a hop, skip, and a jump from where you are, Philly. You're going to play Penn's Landing the next night, right?
Two nights later. Yeah, Friday, the
17th. Two nights later. Okay, cool.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Man, so you know that the folks in Philly are saying, okay, you're going to be coming down for Cindy, right?
Yeah, you're coming to both, right?
Well, definitely for D.C., but I have never gone to, since I've been away from Philly, never gone to a Penn's Landing show that was all about jazz.
No.
No, so definitely I'm considering that. Man, it's going to be hot. And shoot, your calendar, every time you go to CindyBradley.com, keeps getting expanded. Do you ever have time to rest?
Summer's been nice because, you know, I'm a teacher, too.
Yes.
So in the summertime, I'm not teaching. So, you know, I have days in between all these shows. It's more when school's in session that it's hard, because then I teach Monday through Friday, and then I take red eyes and you know, don't sleep and try to get back in time for school and out in time for each show. And it gets a lot crazier, you know, in the fall and in the spring. But, you know, the summer months, lots and lots of gigs and, you know, no teaching. So it's, I really enjoy it a lot more.
Do you ever keep ties with the folks that you knew way back when? I love this little snippet of information about you, that you got so proficient on trumpet so quickly that you were invited to join that Buffalo area jazz unit called Sugar and Jazz.
Yeah. Yeah, Sugar, that was, that's all my best friends from childhood were in that band. We were all 12. Oh, yeah, we were all 12, 13 years old, and it was like a little, actually. It was a big swing band, probably, you know, 25, 30 kids in it. And we would do little short tours and play swing music. And that's where I met all my best friends. Yeah, so, you know, they would be the girls in my wedding, and I was in all their weddings. And, yeah, no, I keep in touch with all of them. And the man who ran the band was an older gentleman, and he's still alive and still running that band.
He's
got to be close to 90 years old now. And the band
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I love the whole premise of this, Cindy, because from what I understood of this gentleman, he really wanted to get who he perceived to be promising young musicians from 12 to 17 together to focus on professionalism and big band sounds from the 40s. That is so awesome.
Yeah, and he didn't turn anyone away.
Really?
Anyone could play. So there'd be years he'd have, you know, 20 saxophones when there should be four, you know, just to let everybody get to play. So it went through different phases, but, you know, it would be completely huge sometimes. And, you know, he let every single kid play that wanted to do it.
Well, now, do you think that was the spark that kept on igniting for you, that drove you to become the mentor that you are today, the educator? Was that it?
I think it had a lot to do with it. I was lucky enough to have a lot of people that inspired me, different teachers. And every time, like, I would have a teacher who really helped me and put the time in, I would just feel, you know, so grateful. Because they were always these people that played so well. They didn't have to share that with me, you know, and they were. So, I don't know. I always kind of like teaching and giving back and seeing some other people get better and get excited about it. And that's always been something that kind of makes me happy. Even if I see, you know, a friend of mine get a record deal or get a great gig or get an endorsement or that kind of stuff, I always get really excited about things like that. So, I don't know.
Do you know how evolved that makes you, honestly?
I don't know. It makes me evolved. I don't know.
Yeah, it really does, because, you know, you being a female artist in a scenario where many female artists could possibly delve into the train of thought that I don't want this to be shared with anybody else. I don't want anybody to get into my space. You, on the other hand, really do triumph when other people do. You've mastered that one crucial tenet of the secret, which is that everybody has a gift, and nobody's gift will ever be like yours. So you might as well do a favor to the universe and share what you have so that other people can recognize theirs.
That's a great way to put it. I think it's just the coolest thing in the world to me. It's like when you get something new and it's really cool and you want to show all your friends. I just think it's like, it's just more about that to me, you know, like you got, oh, let me show you how to do this. And it's really cool. But
so
what was good too.
What was the coolest, one of the coolest moments that you remember so far in your career about this shiny toy? Didn't have to be a shiny toy, didn't have to be a pink trumpet, but what was one of those moments where you went, I can't wait to tell everybody?
Oh, you mean like playing live or like just a moment?
Like anything, like maybe a record deal, or maybe playing with somebody that you really wanted to play with, or maybe a gig?
There's been so many, but
I know
the one that comes to mind. I always, like, from the time I was very, very young, I always wanted a record deal, and I always wanted a trumpet endorsement, because some of these trumpets are, they're so expensive, I knew I'd never be able to afford one. I mean, they can cost more than a car, you know, I said so. I always wanted one of those big, heavy horns, like Wynton Marsalis plays, and I got a trumpet endorsement. And I had a manager, and I said, hey, will you just contact all these trumpet companies and see if anybody wants to endorse me? And I'm sure they'll all say no, because they don't know who I am. And Harrelson Trumpets wrote back and said, yeah, well, we'll build her a horn. And I got to design it, and I would, you know, pick every single part, the thickness of all the pipes, the size of the bell. I got to put inscriptions of things on it, my names on it, pick the colors, pick... It was just like the whole experience was just cool. And then, you know, I get this box shipped to me and I open it up and it's just like I never thought I would own a trumpet like that. And, you know, now I've got more of them than I can count. But the first one, I just remember, I can't believe I'm holding this and it's mine, you know.
And so, you got to design it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
I put like my... astrological sign in it, like the Sagittarius symbols engraved in it. There's moons in the slide because that's what my name means, and it was so much fun. It was just awesome. And then it plays incredible, like nothing I've ever had. So, yep, I'd say that was a big moment.
Boy, that was a real dream come true. Isn't that amazing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
God, well, I hope you're ready for some more. And look, I have to ask you, I don't even know if I thought to ask you in our communication back and forth over the last several weeks, but do you have time to, like, another 30, 40 minutes or so with me?
Sure, yeah, of course.
Yeah? Okay, cool. Well, look, I played Woody Shaw because I wanted to get across, and over communication is key here, wanted to make sure folks knew that there was greatness in the house because Cindy Bradley was going to come to the show. So now I want to play a song, and I thought maybe the coolest thing to play, since recently it's come to mind, somebody described this as a blast of refreshing air that you needed so much and had no idea you were hungry for it. This particular song, Massive Transit.
Oh, Massive Transit. Cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was what somebody who was pretty astute, and I'm paraphrasing there, but I thought, oh, yes! It's like this blast of air that is so refreshing, and it just blows you down because you're swept away.
I'm blushing.
I'm glad. I've done my job here. I'll move along now. Cindy Bradley is with us, and we're going to talk to her some more. Oh, gosh, there's so much to talk about as far as this amazing talent is concerned. But wanted to make sure folks knew about Unscripted. There's so many tracks, and I don't know what else to play, but I want to play this first. Massive Transit on Hyper Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Enjoy. We'll be right back. Cindy Bradley and Massive Transit from Unscripted. And Cindy, honest to goodness, there is a cool story. You were at Cap Jazz Festival in early June, and for folks who have to park, we got to park, and then there's a long way to go, sort of, to get to the woods where everybody's playing. It was a really beautiful day. It was earlier in the day on a Saturday, and there were some of us who were coming in, and that's what we heard as we made our walk through the myriad of paths to get to where,
oh,
where,
wow.
Yep. We heard this song, and this echoed, sounding just like the CD, over the trees, through the trees, while people were trying to listen to their Walkmans, and they turned off their Walkmans. I saw a couple of people do that. And here's this older man. You could tell he was a jazz head from Jump, from back in the day. And he stopped in his tracks. And I was close by. He must have turned to his wife and said, "Who's that?" And I thought, "Well, I'm going to tell him." Said, "Sir, that's Cindy Bradley." And he went, "Wow," he said, "she's got chops."
That's cool.
I love it. Oh, my God. And he was, like, grooving. He couldn't wait to get to you.
Oh, that's so funny. That line was insane.
Yes, I heard.
That festival was something else.
Yeah, those are the folks who
God.
Appreciate you.
Yeah, no, that's cool.
And who did you have playing with you that day? Did you have anybody different playing with you that day?
No, I was actually playing with a band from that area.
Okay, that's what I meant. Do you happen to know any names?
I'm going to look it up right now.
Because was that...
I don't want to get it wrong.
No, you know what? I might save you some trouble. Was that phase two that was backing
it
you
was
up?
It was phase two. Oh, I was going to get you their individual names. Yeah, it was phase
two. Wow. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Man, that's pretty awesome, because actually that's the band that cooks for the Capital Jazz Fest competition that happens on Friday night.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, they're pretty well versed in what to do on stage. Yay! I'm so glad had them.
Oh,
woo!
Yeah, they were awesome. And they backed up Jakeem, too, over that weekend, I believe.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
And they they backed up Frank.
Right. Yep.
Yeah.
The same morning. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Wow. That was so good to hear you, and we had to make choices. I was with my son, so I was doing some of what he wanted to do, and he was doing some of what I wanted to do. But forget about it. I'll be there early for Blues Alley on the 15th, because that's going to be a photo opportunity.
Oh, definitely. We'll have fun.
Yes. And tell me this. And there's so much I want to ask you, but... going back and being on Trippin' and Rhythm, did they pretty much assure you from the start that what you wanted to do was okay by them? And how did Michael Bronin come into the picture?
Basically, when they signed me, it was always really important to both Les Cutmore and Jeff Lunt that I felt like I was being represented as me in the music. And, you know, I was kind of really getting my feet wet with Bloom, too. Like I said, like recording like that was kind of new to me. So
yeah.
Even more so in Unscripted. I mean, Les would constantly say to me, "Do you feel like it's going where you want it to go? Do you feel like it represents Cindy?" And for a label to ask those type of questions and to care about that is really rare. It's usually just about what's going to sell. And instead, so they wanted it to be about Cindy, and they found Michael Bronin, and he won a Grammy working with George Benson.
Yes.
And I actually, before I got signed, I knew who Michael Bronin was. But, you know, they called him and said, "We have this trumpet player. She's brand new. No one really knows who she is. Would you be willing to work with her?" And he said, "Absolutely." He just completely, he's so cool, and he's an amazing producer. Like, he just gets gets the best out of the people he works with and made me feel comfortable. And just, you know, I just go there and sit with him, and we just collaborated, especially on this last one. And it was just an awesome experience. I can't wait to do it again. We're talking about the third one now.
Oh, that's great. And I can't say enough about this, Cindy, because Michael seems to get the whole picture, not just one side of the picture, and that's why I appreciate him so much with working with you, because you obviously wanted to do some things that, how else do I put this? A person, an artist who is categorized in a certain way, if you are a contemporary jazz artist, you don't necessarily stray from that subdivision of jazz. But you went all over this beautiful little journey. I mean, I am so proud that you cut Footprints. Can I just tell you, I love that version of that Wayne Shorter song so much.
Nice. Very cool.
Man.
He had no, there was no agenda to fill. It was really just, just going wherever it went. And he also really got to know me as a person, especially between Bloom and the next CD. I think 2 years went by. And we became really good friends, and he knew everything that was going on in my life, too. And I was having a really hard year, and he kind of, tapped into that, too. And it was a pretty emotional type of experience recording Unscripted.
Mm. I remember that you were going through some things at that time, and bless his heart, because he had the sensitivity to be able to figure out how to use that. And, boy, did it ever work. Wow.
Yeah, he's awesome.
And what do you think? I mean, for the next project, where is your head now? What are you listening to now? And what are your inspirations that may have been a little different, like a few years ago?
You know, in thinking about the next one, I'll be honest, I'm not exactly sure like where I want to go with it. And I was just starting to think about it, but writing and playing music is usually pretty reflective of me and my what I'm going through in my life. It's like very personal to me, and I'm in a much different place now than I was back then. Like life is just beautiful and positive now, whereas back then it was, there was people sick in my family and a lot of hard things, and now everything's great. So I don't know. I think that'll probably influence it a bit, and then maybe more so just exploring other avenues, and I love the way it we kind of went into the straight ahead roots a bit, and I think there'll be more of that, but we're kind of in the beginning stages. I don't know if that's a good answer or not, but I feel
that
is really different, so maybe it'll affect the project. I'm sure it will.
So do you have an idea of who you'd like to bring into the mix, or is there any input that maybe could persuade you to bring some folks that you ordinarily wouldn't have? But honestly, you could ask anybody and they would say yes to you at this point. Do you have seriously, do you have personnel in mind for it, or are you going to?
It's sort of just more or less in general. Like with Bloom, Michael chose everyone on the CD.
Mm.
He hired everyone. I didn't know anybody in the circuit. I said, you're the producer, he got amazing musicians. And then with Unscripted, one of the things that was important to me, I said, look, now that I'm kind of in this a little bit more, I want to use people that are that I like that are less known. People out here in New York City that I've played in clubs with for years and that nobody's heard of, but they're killer players. So there's a lot of, it's kind of a combination of the two. I mean, there's like the main studio people that you hear playing on everyone's stuff. And then the other half of the people were these New York City players like Tim Veder, who's a great saxophone player that's getting more known now, but nobody, most people hadn't heard of Tim. People like that. Ernie Donadell is a great bass player in North Carolina. He's on Unscripted. So I think I don't have anyone, you know, specific, but I want to do more of that. I want to have more people that are maybe lesser known, because there's so many great players.
Oh my God!
Everywhere, you know, and you sometimes just never get to hear them.
Cindy, I completely understand, and I don't know what the circumstances that will dictate themselves to you when you come to Blue. But honestly, it's just really fabulous that so many national and international artists come to Blues Alley because they utilize the D.C. or the Baltimore musicians for that stage. And
mm-hmm.
9 times out of 10, if I get the feedback, I hear, holy shiggity, I can't believe that this, you know, musician that's D.C.-based, that somebody may have never heard before,
mm-hmm.
got the artist to such an extent. I mean, in this corridor, are you kidding? Baltimore, D.C., Philly, you know, there are so many awesome musicians. And that was a beautiful answer. That would be the Cindy Bradley answer I would expect. You would rather have folks who get you, that you've got an affinity for, that you feel comfortable on stage with. That means everything in the way of the honesty of the music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Man, that's good to hear. So you have a clock, a time frame for this new project, maybe?
No, but it's ticking. Like, I feel behind already. You know, like Unscripted took me a really long time. You know, like, we really took our time with it. And people are asking for it feels like forever, when's the next one coming out? And I, you know, but it finally did. But I feel like, no, I need to get on it. I don't have a time frame. I'm sure it'll be later than I hope. But
well, that's cool. I mean, because you've got to do it when it feels right. What
right.
do people suggest to you? Do people freely give their advice on what they would like to hear from you? I'm dying to ask you that.
Sure. Mm-hmm. I get emails a lot from people saying, a lot of times specific songs too. People will find like a specific cover song and they'll say, I'd love to hear you do this one. Or they'll pick a song they really like Massive Trends, and they'll say, please do more of that. You know, because there's kind of a wide variety of different types of songs on these CDs. So sometimes people will say, please do more ballads, do more flugelhorn ballads, or do more funky stuff too. So it really depends on the person. You'd get a whole wide range of suggestions. But
well, I'm in the corner of those folks who might say to you, you know, if you want to delve more into that Wayne Shorter scenario there, if you want to go back to your New England Conservatory roots and explore more of that and remember what folks were doing back at Ithaca College, and
mm-hmm.
if you want to do more of the straight-ahead vibe, I ain't going to be mad at you, Cindy.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
I know you do. I know, and you learned that early, and that's what I want people to know about you. You learned so much so early. You were immersed in this much before a lot of artists realized that they like jazz.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know?
That's been it.
And, God, you were playing piano at 6, so it's something that you've done ever since you can remember remembering.
Yeah, I was never really a pianist, but I mean, I took lessons forever. But once I got around 12 years old, that trumpet was all I did, and it still is. I don't do anything else.
Yeah, oh, I know, and I'm so glad that you got the endorsement. I'm so glad that you're getting the respect. That's a big part of the whole Trippin' and Rhythm thing, because they respect you so much that they know that there's something special that you're doing, and you're so young that I don't even know what you're going to be like when you get to be my old cranky age, Cindy. I mean, what are you going to be doing? It's just mind-blowing to me because I believe in you so much.
Thank you, Trish.
Well, you're welcome. You're welcome. And I'm not going to take up too much of your time. What would you like to say as far as folks who are new to you or folks who are used to you? What would you
want to be able to say to the folks who have supported you?
Oh, the hugest thank you. And it's, you know, when I first tried to do this and got signed, it was really apparent how hard it is to break in, and that it's really hard for somebody new to get on these festivals and to even get the record deal, and the genre is changing so much, and it's hard. And the one thing I noticed is the fans and the people that listen to this music just completely embraced me.
Mm.
They were really supportive right from the start. It was, I mean, they were open to hearing new people and you know, buying tickets to come to a festival with some new artists and going to hear them and buying the CDs. And they've been open minded, and I felt nothing but support since the first day. So just, I mean, and I didn't necessarily expect that. I thought, you know, that you don't see a lot of new people breaking in. Maybe people aren't open to it. But it's been quite the opposite. So, you know, I was pleasantly surprised. So just this is a huge thank you to all of them.
Well, actually, you know, with the, and this is a word to use as far as some of these stations are concerned, the terrestrial stations, they've, you know, been discarded. There hasn't been too much thought into discarding them. But you would think that because they have been eliminated, folks would turn their attention away. And I think fans are getting even more ravenous for anything they can as far as jazz music is concerned, no matter how you slice it. They are just so hungry to be able to hear not just good jazz, but great jazz. So it's going to be interesting to see this second half of 2012 as we go into 2013, how that's all going to play out. I've got a good feeling about it. Do you?
I do. Yeah, I do. And the more I'm out playing, I see it. You know, I see the people that do come out. Like we just talked about the Capital Jazz Festival, the line was just insane.
Yeah.
People waiting to get in and hear the music. So, yeah, I do have a good feeling.
Yeah, I think that folks are paving the way. I think that you are one of those people I have in mind, because if there was any expectations of Cindy Bradley's Unscripted CD, when it came out, you surpassed the expectations. You gave people a whole lot more than what they could have imagined, and I'm going to delve into that. And during the course of the show, I also want to get into one of those songs. I know that you touched on this when we had our other interview on Cool Jazz Conversations. I love One Moment More so much.
Oh, God. I'm going to cry if you play
it. Oh,
that.
No, don't. No, I won't play it in front of you. I deliberately
okay.
am not going to do that.
Mute, no.
Oh, no. But I also wanted to play, you worked with Pete Gitlin, and he's in the chat room today, by the way.
Oh, no way. Hi, Pete.
Yes, he is so thrilled. He's going to be on the show on his birthday on August 16th.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
He's awesome. He is an awesome guitarist and writer,
yeah.
And I'm a big fan. Big Pete fan.
And, you know, it didn't even cross my mind. He says, hi, Cindy. it didn't even cross my mind because Michael Broning's on Pete's CD.
Right, yeah. Because he worked with John Herrera, who's another awesome producer.
Wow.
Like, and they work with Mike Broning all the time. And, yeah, it's a nice little scene out there.
That is so cool. I love the idea that the whole jazz community is just this really special incestuous family.
It is. That's the way it should be, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right. One last question for you. If you had your druthers, is there something that you want really badly and you want to put it out there in the universe?
Is there something I want really badly just in general?
Something specific, like an award or something to happen to you that is monumental that you can't even think about it because it's too special.
Wow. It's really hard for me to think of something. I'll be honest with you. Like I everything has surpassed what I thought it would be already. And, you know, I want more of it, and I want to play more and get out there more and do more recordings and reach more people. But, to pick one specific thing, it's hard. It's like you always have one big goal. Like, I want a record deal. And then when you get it, then you want, then I wanted that endorsement, and then I got
it. And you got it!
And then you want an award, and you get a couple of those. And
yes,
I've been
multi
so lucky.
Awards.
I would say I want to go on a smooth jazz cruise. I haven't done that.
Really?
I want to go on a smooth jazz cruise. Yes.
Oh, my God, you haven't done that?
No.
Oh, that's ridiculous. You need to be on one of those cruises because
that's my next goal. That's what I want.
Well, here's what you do. Gosh darn it now, because this would be really awesome. The Soul Train cruise is sold out for 2013 already.
They're so far ahead, yeah.
Yes. And George Duke, who really needs some folks to rally around him right now because he lost his wife in the past few weeks. But you know what? I think that he's got a lot to do with being musical director or one of them. So you get in touch with George Duke, or I will, or something, because I would love to see you do a Soul Train cruise in 2014. That would be off the wall.
All right. I'll Facebook George.
That's cool. That's cool. He's at a Zappa festival this weekend, so he'll enjoy hearing from you.
All right.
But, you know, as far as, you know, jazz is concerned, that's cool. But these funk people need to see you too, Cindy.
Oh, yeah. I love those things, definitely.
Well, that's cool. All right. Well, then our work is cut out for us, chat room. Get on the horn. Make sure you do your work. And we will see you at Blues Alley, and CindyBradley.com has the lowdown on where you're going to be.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Trish.
Thank you. I appreciate your time. I really do. And you know that I'll always, always be in your corner.
Definitely the best. Likewise.
Oh, good. Thank you, because I'll need that someday.
You got it.
Thanks, Cindy. Say hello to Dan for us.
I will. I definitely will.
Okay, cool. Thanks.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Cindy Bradley, God bless her heart. Yay. And look, I'm kind of, you know, glad that we have a little bit of time here, because you know that this has been played a time or two before. But you just have to hear, now that you have the attention of all those fellow chat roomers and the folks who are going to be hearing this either live or in archive. Here is the other side of what this woman can do. This is 7.5 minutes. Wayne Shorter's Footprints from Unscripted. Cindy Bradley on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy.